This is Telling Tales with Ms. G here at 104.3 in Juneau, Alaska, KTOO. And tonight I am celebrating, well, actually all month, Asian Pacific American Heritage Month. And with that in mind, I have two wonderful short stories. One by Miss Lily Hong, The Story of the Mosquito. And the second one is by Naoko Awa. She's from Japan. And that's titled A First Day of Snow. So I'll give you a second to get settled, and then I'll be back with my first story here at Telling Tales with Ms. G, 104.3 in Juneau, Alaska. Stay tuned. This is Ms. G. I'm here back with Telling Tales here at 104.3 in Juneau, Alaska. And tonight's first story is by Lily Hong from Vietnam. And the title is The Story of the Mosquito. Once in a place far away from this place, in a time that was before this time, a woman named Ngoc lived in a village. Although she lived in a village, she wanted to live in a city. Cities, you see, offer riches and rich men and rich husbands and rich suitors, and villages, you see, offer none of these things. Ngoc means jade or treasure. It's a fitting name. Not only is she a treasure in and of herself, a real gem of a gal, but she also desires treasure. This is a story like all other magic stories. Don't be fooled. Just because our characters have different names does not make them fundamentally any different from the archetypical characters you've come to know and love. These names are just markers, a way to signal to you that they are set in a place that is not this place. These names are just markers to explain that their values and culture may be slightly variant from yours, but you really don't need to be scared. We understand. Things that are different can be frightening, but this is not a ghost story. This is a magic story, and although it ends with sadness, those who are good will be rewarded, and those who are bad will be punished. We are a just people. Even though we look different and speak a different language and our people have different names, we too believe in justice. Now, Ngoc lived in a village, a very poor village, and although she was very beautiful, as all female characters in magic stories are, she was stuck. How beautiful was Ngoc? Well, we probably shouldn't indulge in encouraging her propensity for superficialities, but her hair was the deepest black, stained darker than shadow. This magnified her bright skin, which turned rosy in the sun. Her eyes were simple slits, more eyelash than eye. They were elusive smoke. And her body, well, let us suffice to say, she was a dream. She was naturally what women today can achieve only through science and artificialities. But all of this meant nothing, because Ngoc and her family had no money. And so, like all women, beautiful or not, who come to a certain age, her family married her to a man. Although she didn't eat much, her family was so poor that providing anything at all was providing too much. The night before the marriage ceremony, Ngoc dreamed her husband would be old and ugly, with a gut sagging past his testicles. But she dreamed he was rich. He could buy her anything she wanted, and she wanted everything. He moved her to the city, and although she would have to satisfy him, he would allow her to take lovers as well, because her old husband understood that young, beautiful women have needs, too, needs that old men with sagging guts could not necessarily, let us say, rise to meet. So Ngoc, when she awoke from the most glorious of dreams, prayed it would become truth. As she dressed in her red ale dye and pulled her hair away from her face, she imagined the moment her new husband would take his wrinkly, arthritic hand to pull back her veil to reveal her face. How excited he would be, how he would shower her, not with affection, but with money. This was what she desired most. Instead, of course, her husband was a young man, exceedingly handsome, and without a penny to his name. But having never met her, he loved her immediately. He was a faithful mule, and he wanted to give her whatever she wanted, if only because she looked all the more beautiful when she was happy. He was the kind of husband all women dream of, except, of course, for Ngoc. To her, he was a nightmare. His name was Hien, which means gentle. She would have preferred a man with a name that predicted wealth. Hien was educated, smart, with a love for literature and the arts. He could speak English, having gone to his university in Saigon, but he wanted a traditional wife, and so he returned to his village to find her. His parents, being old friends of Ngoc's parents, knew they had a beautiful, eligible daughter. Of course, if his parents had known what a money-hungry woman she was, they never would have chosen her. And it was not as though Ngoc did not get anything she wanted. Immediately after the marriage ceremony, she demanded they move to Saigon. Given he had a post at the university, he had planned that anyway. But he didn't tell her this. Instead, he hesitated only momentarily before saying, "If that's what you want." But life in the city was not what she imagined. Hien had a modest apartment. He worked incessantly but did not bring home much money. She didn't have the jewels she wanted. In truth, Hien wasn't nearly as poor as people thought he was. He wanted to live simply. He didn't believe in excess. He brought home only a small portion of his salary. The rest he gave to the poor, which were many in Saigon, or to his family. Hien understood that his wife wanted riches and jewels, and although he could have provided these to her, he didn't think it was fair that his small family should have so much when so many more were without. Ngoc, however, believed her husband was a fool, a man with education who worked as an educator who ate rice and fish sauce for every meal, only occasionally indulging in meat. And, of course, she was a fool to stay with a foolish man. Because her husband was at his office for most of the day, Ngoc began to wander. She met rich men, men who desired her, and even though she was married, there was nothing wrong with accepting gifts. Then one day, Ngoc fell ill. She fell ill, and there were not enough doctors to cure her. All the money Hien had stashed away was depleted, taking her to the best doctors and hospitals in Saigon. She coughed blood and lost flesh. Her face changed color. Her teeth became weak. Hien sat at her bedside as in love as ever and promised that if she would become well again, he would give her all the money and jewels she wanted. All she had to do was recover. But by then it was too late. Before Ngoc died, she had asked her husband to lift her body from the bed. Below, she had stashed her treasures, gold bracelets, jade pendants, excess, excess. Ngoc asked her husband to dress her in the finest silk ale dye and adorn her with all her jewelry. And although he was disgusted, he obliged his wife because she was, after all, his wife, and he loved her. She died within the hour, and Hien could not be consoled. He cried until his tears rose to the level of her deathbed. Then he cried until his dead wife floated. Even then his tears were not exhausted, and he continued to cry. After 3 days of crying, a fairy appeared. She said, "Kin, this isn't right. She was a bad wife, one who neither loved nor appreciated you. What are you doing crying like this?" Kin said, "What you say may be true, but she was my wife. How could I not be devastated?" The fairy said, "But she was unworthy." Kin said, "But I was unworthy." The fairy, frustrated, said, "There is something. If you loved her, truly loved her, remove 3 drops of blood from your body to nourish her back to health. But be careful. You are giving your life for hers. What will you do if she doesn't love you in return?" But he did not hear her warning. He put a knife to his wrist and made a small incision. He let 3 drops of his clean blood fall onto her lips, which were cracked and pale. Nagok opened her eyes. The fairy disappeared. But she did not change her ways. Nagok continued to wander, even though her husband gave her a healthy allowance. With the money Hin gave her, she could afford fine silks and the purest jewels, but it was not enough. She had nearly died. She had to live her life fully. And Hin continued to work and love his wife. He sacrificed more and more, giving her money while denying himself any pleasure. Until the day came when Nagok found another man, an old man with a sagging belly down to his testicles, who wanted to marry her. She said, "I'm leaving you." Kin was confused. He couldn't understand, but she had packed all her possessions. He said, "But I love you." She said, "If you loved me, how could you deny me anything? Love is extravagance. If you loved me, you would show me by giving me everything I want." He said, "But I've given you everything. You don't lack food or shelter or even jewelry, and you have me. I've done nothing but adore you." She said, "But your adoration is empty. It means nothing." Hin thought about this. His love meant nothing. His love meant her life. He demanded his 3 drops of blood back. She laughed. "Who needs your 3 pathetic drops of blood? That's all you've ever given me, and what sacrifice was it to you?" Just as quickly as she said it, she took a pin to her forefinger and spilled his 3 drops of blood. They fell from her finger and saturated the ground. The mosquito was born that day, wandering here and there in search of those 3 drops of blood to bring her back to life. As for Hin, after his wife vanished, which to him she did simply vanish, the fairy knocked on his door. She appeared before him, a humble woman with kind eyes, and together they lived happily ever after. So here you see, this was in fact a magic story just like any other magic story. If only we'd taken the time to change the names, you would have never known the difference, because mosquitoes are everywhere. And everywhere, they are greedy and unforgiving. I hope you liked that story. That was The Story of the Mosquito by Lily Huang. This is Ms. G giving you Telling Tales, and I'll be right back. Stay tuned for more. This is Ms. G. I'm bringing you Telling Tales here tonight at 104.3 in Juneau, Alaska. And I have another short story for you. This one is by Naoko Awa, and it's called The First Day of Snow. It was a cold day in late autumn. On a path running straight through the village, a young girl crouched down. Looking at the ground, she tilted her head and breathed deeply. Who was hopscotching here? She wondered aloud. Hopscotch rings drawn in chalk continued endlessly on the path, across the bridge and toward the mountains. The girl stood up. What a long hopscotch! She cried, widening her eyes. When she hopped into a ring, her body became as light as a bouncing ball. 1 foot, 1 foot, 2 feet, one. With her hands in her pockets, a girl hopped forward. She hopped across the bridge and down a narrow path through cabbage fields, then past the only tobacco shop in the village. Oh, you have a lot of energy, said an old woman who minded the shop. Panting for breath, the girl smiled proudly. In front of the candy shop, a large dog barked and bared its teeth. Who on earth drew a hopscotch this long? The girl thought as she hopped. When she reached the bus stop, snow flurries began to blow. The hopscotch rings kept coming. The girl kept hopping, her red face sweaty. 1 foot, 1 foot, 2 feet, one. The sky had turned dark, and a cold wind blew. The snow started to fall heavily and left white spots on the girl's red sweater. It may turn into a blizzard, the girl thought. Maybe I should go home now. Then she heard a voice from behind her. 1 foot, 2 feet, hop, hop, hop. Surprised, she turned around and saw a snow-white rabbit hopscotching after her. 1 foot, 2 feet, hop, hop, hop. When the girl looked closely, she saw another rabbit behind that one. As the snow kept falling, many more white rabbits began following her. She gaped in amazement. This time she heard a voice from ahead. White rabbits behind you, white rabbits in front. 1 foot, 2 feet, hop, hop, hop. When she looked ahead, the girl saw a long line of white rabbits hopping. Oh, I had no idea. She felt as if she were in a dream. Where are you going? She asked. Where does this lead to? The rabbit in front of her answered, to the end of the world, where snow rabbits who make snow fall. What? The girl was startled. She remembered a story her grandmother once told her. On the first day of snow, a herd of white rabbits came from north. They went from village to village, dropping the snow. They moved so fast, humans saw only a white line. You have to be careful, her grandmother said. If you're caught in the herd of white rabbits, you can never come home. You hop to the end of the world with the rabbits and turn into a chunk of snow. When the girl first heard the story, a chill ran down her spine. Now she was about to be taken away by the rabbits. I'm in trouble, the girl screamed inside her head. She tried to stop. She tried to stop her feet from stepping into the next ring. Then the rabbit behind her said, don't stop. We're right behind you. 1 foot, 2 feet. Hop, hop, hop. Her body bounced like a rubber ball, hopping along the hopscotch rings. While hopping, the girl remembered her grandmother telling a story. Her grandmother had stopped sewing for a moment and said, once there was a girl who came home alive after being taken away by rabbits. She chanted with all her might, mugwort, mugwort, mugwort in spring. Mugwort is a charm against evil. I'm going to do the same, the girl thought. As she hopped, she imagined a mugwort field. She thought about the warm sunlight, dandelions, honeybees, and butterflies. She took a deep breath. When she was about to say, mugwort, mugwort, she was interrupted by the rabbit singing. We're snow rabbits, white as snow, and snow falls everywhere we go. White as snow, we never stop. 1 foot, 2 feet, hop, hop, hop. The girl covered her ears with her hands, but the rabbit's singing became louder and louder and spilled into her ears through the gaps between her fingers and kept her from chanting the mugwort charm. The herd of rabbits and the girl went through a fir forest, crossed a frozen lake, and reached faraway places she had never seen. She saw villages lined with small grass-roofed houses, small towns strewn with sansequoia blossoms, and big cities crowded with factories. But no one noticed the rabbits and the girl. "Oh, it's the first snow of winter," people mumbled and hurried away. As she hopped, the girl tried to chant the charm, but her voice was drowned out by the rabbit's song. "We're the color of snow, 1 foot, 2 feet, hop, hop, hop." The girl's limbs were numb with cold as ice. Her cheeks turned pale and her lips quivered. "Grandmother, help," she thought. Then she hopped into a ring and found a leaf. She picked it up and saw it was a mugwort leaf, bright green. On the back, it had fluffy white hairs. "Oh, who dropped this for me?" the girl thought. She held the mugwort leaf to her chest. Then she felt someone cheering for her. She felt many small creatures rooting for her. She could hear the voices of seeds under the snow, breathing, enduring the cold beneath the ground. A wonderful riddle came into her mind. She closed her eyes, took a deep breath, and cried, "Why is the back of a mugwort leaf so white?" Hearing this, the rabbit ahead of her tottered. He stopped singing and turned around. "The back of a mugwort leaf?" he said. "I wonder why," said the rabbit behind her, stumbling. The rabbit's singing broke off and the pace slowed down. Seizing the moment, the girl said, "That's easy. It's rabbit fur. Rabbits roll around in the field and shed their hair on mugwort leaves." "Yes, you're right," said the rabbits, delighted. They started singing a new song. "We're the color of spring of the hairs on a mugwort leaf. 1 foot, 2 feet, hop, hop, hop." Then the girl thought she smelled the fragrance of flowers in the air. She heard the chirping of small birds. She imagined herself hopscotching in a mugwort field bathed in spring sun. Her cheeks turned rosy. She closed her eyes, took a deep breath, and shouted, "Mugwort, mugwort, mugwort in spring." When she opened her eyes, she was hopping alone along a strange path in a strange town. She saw no rabbits ahead or behind. Snow flurried. The hopscotch rings were no longer on the path, and the mugwort leaf was gone from her hand. "Ah, I'm safe," the girl thought. But she couldn't take another step. A crowd of strangers gathered around her and asked for her name and address. When she told them the name of her village, they looked at each other, muttering, "I can't believe it." They didn't think a child could have walked from such a faraway place beyond many mountains. Then an old woman said, "She must have been led away by rabbits." The townspeople fed the girl warm food and put her on a bus home before dark. This is First Day of Snow by Nyoko Awa. It's translated from the Japanese by Chishiwa Kame. I hope you enjoyed it. This is Ms. G giving you Telling Tales here at KTO 104.3 in Juneau. I'll be right back. Thank you. Hi there. This is Ms. G, bringing you Telling Tales still here at 104.3. And before we leave, before I leave you, I wanted to play something from Ms. Christy Neme Erickson off of her How to Tell If a Korean Woman Loves You. And it's called I Can't Wait to Be an Old Asian American Woman. So hopefully you'll enjoy that. And then after that, I'll be signing off. And till next time, enjoy.
Can't wait to be an old Asian American woman. I'm gonna only buy clothes that actually look good on me, and I'm gonna wear high heels to the supermarket. I'm gonna carry hot sauce in my purse and put it on my grandchildren's grilled cheese and tell them it's good for them. I won't let young people put my photo on the Facebook. I'm gonna let anyone who offers carry all my groceries, and I'm gonna leave unsolicited advice on my receipts and consider them big tips. When it is too dark for a 1:30 in the afternoon, I'm gonna legitimately cancel all my obligations. I'm gonna pour boiling water over a humble bag of tea and thank the gentleman who picked every sweet leaf. Thank the driver who carried boxes of them across the country over yellow fields and bad radio stations. Thank the store boy who held each one for an eighth of a moment, gave them a number, and placed them on a bright shelf. Thank the table for holding my scribbles, my spices, my sight above the ground. Thank my nose, all the foods and flowers and men it still holds on to. Thank my wrinkled fingers, my extension cord hands, my unoiled wrists for infinite sons of labor. Every eye they dot, every chin they've held, every fist they've ever been locked in. I'll lift a fresh cup to my aged lips and I'll fold a kiss into it. Just as I've kissed sentences and sons and steel blades all across Asian America. And I'll do nothing else but sit in my favorite chair and let all my migrant muscles rest along every shaded Korean bone in my body. And I will think only lovely things. I will be old enough then to know how to take care in a revolution.